Brooks Hayes, in addition to distinguishing himself as a Christian statesman, has also attracted considerable attention as Washington's quickest wit. As a result, he has appeared on a number of national television programs, including a visit on the Jack Parr Show in the spring of 1963.
Old Chet Huntley made an album, or actually presented an album. It's called The Best of Washington Humor. And it's a nonpartisan thing. I mean, all of the great wits in Washington are in it. Senator Keating, our own senator, and Barry Goldwater, and Sergeant Shriver, and Charlie Halleck, and Adlai Stevenson, some of the great speeches they made. And I listened to this album, and from it, the man who steals the whole thing is a man called Brooks Hayes. And he's an amazingly interesting man. Brooks Hayes is a special assistant to President Kennedy. He is a lawyer, a former congressman from Arkansas. He's a Phi Beta Kappa. He's a pioneer in race relations. As a matter of fact, risked his career out there on the strong stand he took during the Little Rock incidents. He's a well-known churchman, and what will surprise you, one of the best storytellers that I've ever heard. He's leaves tonight with his darling little wife for a trip to Africa for the president. And I know you'll treat him warmly and well. He's a really fine man. Barry Goldwater and Dick Nixon, when they were here, knew that Brooks Hayes were coming on. And he's a Democrat, but they love him very much. He's a fine gentleman. Mr. Brooks Hayes. Brooks, you look a lot like Joe Kennedy.
Oh, well, some people take me for the president's father.
You do look like him a little bit.
Well, thank you.
You're a fine man, Brooks. You've done a lot of very brave, courageous things in your state. If I may say this about your state, and I've never been there, but it seems to me that it was somewhat less sophisticated of our states because of its economic opportunities have not been so good, and yet we might even think of it as somewhat backward in some ways, and yet you have produced such fine statesmen as Fulbright and John McClellan and yourself. It's a great credit to either the men or the state.
Well,
but
you're very kind, Jack. I've never said anything more flattering of my state than that it's the greatest commonwealth in the galaxy of sovereign powers whose star shines out from our flag like the brightest orb of celestial night.
Now you see why he's a special assistant to the president, boy. You get that double talk, and you never know what you want with the problem. With. How is the president? When did you see him last?
Well, I saw him yesterday, I believe, a day or two ago, telling him that I was to be on your program and then to leave for Africa. He took something off of me. He saw the little rocker in my lapel.
The gold rocker that they're wearing?
He didn't ask for it, but I knew he wanted it, and he hadn't seen one, so I took it off and gave it to him. You know, the rocker.
The
you remember?
Rocking chair.
Yeah, the newspaper man said, "Mr. Hayes, what's it the symbol for?" And I said, "It is not the symbol of rest and inactivity and complacency." And here you ought to have some soft organ music, Jack. I said, "It's the symbol of faith and confidence." And he liked that, so I gave it to him, but he said, "Let's swap." And he took the little PT boat symbol off the tie clasp and gave it to me, so I'd rather have this because he wore it.
Yeah. I wish you'd send me one of those. I'd love to have one of those.
Oh, I'm going to get you one, not this.
Well, only because I got a little involved once with that story, and I'm very proud of knowing some of those boys that were with the president. Listen, do you see the president much? Are you close to him?
I'm sorry you ask it like that. He's on the east wing, and he's on the west wing, and I'm on the east wing. So it's like the dear little lady in Arkansas said when I asked her if she saw Halley's Comet. She said, "Just from a distance." I want to take up for the East Wing. There's a lot of brain power. I'm right next door to a very wonderful man, Dr. Arthur Schlesinger. The president put me there, I think. He's the Harvard professor, you know.
Yes.
Put me there so if he came up to any real hard questions, I'd be accessible. And I'd have an Arkansas cornfield answer. Of course, one of my Republican friends said, "Well, the trouble with you and Schlesinger both is that you're answering questions nobody's asked." And the report's going around Washington that the East Wing is sagging, that the foundation is sinking. I think that's because there are about five other special assistants who have great intellectual power, too. And this part of the story that I'm about to add, it's a little joke on myself, and I've got to check it with Ms. Evelyn Lincoln. I'm pretty sure that he didn't say it, but someone said to the president, you know, Brooks heard about this foundation sinking because of the heavy brain power there, and he's offered to move over to the West Wing. And the president said, well, that's awful nice of Brooks, but that wouldn't help us a bit. I just don't believe he said it, Jack.
I was there the night that Arthur went in the swimming pool.
Yes, well...
Zip myself, go ahead.
Well, they oughtn't to get around that swimming pool. Only Baptists ought to be there. And I am a Baptist.
I know you're a Baptist.
Well, you've been kind enough to mention it. Yeah. And I'm devoted to them. If the Baptists and I are ever separated, they'll leave me. I'll never leave them. I'm not as narrow in my faith and loyalty, though, as Brother Wilson was when they tried to consolidate our little church with the Christian church. They're a good deal alike, you know. And he wound up his argument against it by saying, I'm a Baptist, and nobody's going to make a Christian out of me. Jack, I'm a Democrat, and nobody will ever make anything else out. I love my Republican friends. I'm glad you had these friends of mine. And I want everything good in life for him except public office.
Eisenhower appointed you with the TV.
Well, yes, he did. He found me out of a job. And it was embarrassing to be offered a job by a Republican. Of course, it wasn't too embarrassing to turn it down. He sent me down to the TVA country. There are 10 of the great dams there, and it was a wonderful assignment. Incidentally, as we left his office, Jerry Persons turned to him and said, Mr. President, maybe we can make a Republican out of Brooks. He said, Jerry, you couldn't do that with a good old Democrat like Brooks, but soften him up. I guess they did, because when I was in Knoxville, which is a sort of a Republican island in the Democratic state, I just didn't see any Democrats at all, and I got real homesick and lonesome. Finally, one day, one of these good old-fashioned Baptist preachers came up to me, and he said, Brooks, you know, I'm a Democrat. Well, I thought I can talk a little politics now. But he added, this year I'm going to vote for the Republicans. They've been so nice to you. That shouldn't have happened.
You hold a very high office in the Baptist faith, don't you? Don't you have a...
Well, I was president. I shouldn't have been, but they're a very democratic body, and it was so thrilling to be elected, I just had to accept.
Well, you're very active in church.
I have been, Jack.
You know, Billy Graham is a good pal of mine.
Oh, he's a great fella and a friend of mine, too.
He's a great guy.
He introduced me once here in New York. He said, Mr. Hayes will make a few brief remarks. And I said to the audience, I said, that's the most unscriptural thing my beloved friend Billy ever said. It's unscriptural because the Bible says, thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn. That's in the Bible.
Yeah, I know it is.
We Baptists, we do claim the right to dissent and to disagree. That's a part of our democratic spirit. I think that's the reason they make such good Americans, too. They're loyal to their faith, but they're loyal to a country that honors their religious liberty. And that's something, of course, we don't monopolize. That's shared with everyone now. I didn't mean to get serious about it. I know that you agree with these observations, but that's one of my the qualities of my Baptist people that I like to talk about.
Aren't you one of the few Christian leaders that has had an audience with the Pope, and you pray for each other?
Well, Jack, there's an amazing story about that. Of course, I guess my wife shouldn't have said it. She said when somebody asked, said, Brooks met the Pope, she said, yes, Brooks thought he should grant an audience to the Pope. And it wasn't quite like that, but I had the honor of being the first Baptist official in modern times to meet him. I didn't have an opportunity to refer to the fact that I was from Little Rock, although I'm sure it wasn't necessary he knew it. You see, in 1871, when they had the Ecumenical Council and they were voting on papal infallibility, there were only two votes against the dogma, and one was from Little Rock. And I think the Pope of those days had a good sense of humor, as the present Pope does.
Oh,
he said, well, the big rock rolled over the Little Rock. I think you'd be interested in this. The high point of our talk, and I'm pleased to tell my Baptist people about this, was his statement, Mr. Hayes, we're brothers in Christ. This is something for a church that regards us as the separated brethren to say. But it's an interesting thing to me that our Baptist people, who do not agree with some of the basic tenets of the Catholic faith, have appreciated this remark. And when we were leaving, he said, tell me about your family. And I said, well, mentioning our daughter and our son, this is our daughter's birthday. He said, it's our practice, my practice, he said, in my rosary prayers, to mention by name the friends I pray for, and I shall pray for your family, and particularly for your daughter, whose birthday is today. And if you had been at 2nd and C Street Southeast in Washington on his birthday, you'd have seen me walk up the steps of St. Peter's Cathedral, take a seat in the back of the cathedral, and pray for him, that God would let him live a long time. You see, I believe that these references are entirely appropriate. We've reached the place in American life when no man is proscribed because of his religious affiliations, and great advancement has been made in the building of brotherhood. Catholic and Protestant, Gentile and Jew work together as never before, it seems to me. A few rough spots, of course, work to be done. But to me, that was a symbol of our feeling of fellowship. And I never offered a more sincere prayer in my life. And I think significant things are taking place on both sides of the Protestant-Catholic axis, and that this is good for humanity. Our president said one time... You see, I'm afraid I took the stump, or should I say took the pulpit at that point. I didn't mean to preach a sermon or make a speech, but our president put it in a capsule one time that if we fulfill the world's hope, it will be by fulfilling our own faith. And I don't think you can ever disassociate the two, and we cooperate in appropriate ways. Well, you've seen practical ways of the church cooperating with the state, with the government. Take the call we had the other day. One of our Baptist preachers, the Internal Revenue Collector, called. And he said, Brother Smith said, Horace Wilson shows on his income tax return that he contributed $500 to your church last year. Did he? Preacher said, well, I don't have the records here in front of me. I'll have to check. But I'll tell you one thing. If he didn't, he will.
Brooks, you have some stories about little old ladies about voting that I know are very amusing.
Well, I say sweet little ladies. I never talk...
All of us comedians do that whenever we have a joke that's actually a little against the Lydia Pinkham crowd. What you do first is say the sweet little old lady, and you put the dagger in. You know? I see you're learning all the tricks.
Well, they're my choice stories, really. Among my choice stories, the... Dear little lady in England, for example, who was asked who she voted for, she says, vote? Oh, I never vote. It only encourages them. then she was asked about the conservative or the liberal. She said, well, I voted for the conservative. I felt so sorry for him. He was such a poor speaker. then there was the little lady who said there really isn't any difference between the Tories and the liberals. The Tories think they're better born, and the liberals just know they're born better. I like the one of the little lady who heard the sergeant speak to me as I was leaving the White House the other day, and he said, well, this has been a pretty day, Mr. Hayes, sort of like Arkansas weather. And she spoke up and said, you're from Arkansas? And I said, yes. She said, I guess you know Congressman Hayes. And I said, I am Congressman Hayes. Oh, she said, I want to meet you. I've always wanted to meet Congressman Rutherford B. Hayes. now, I'll have to give you my real favorite because it involves the dearest of all, my mother-in-law, my wife's 95-year-old mother-in-law, who witnessed the ceremony when Mr. Kennedy gave me my commission and swore me in. And I turned to him and said, Mr. President, you'll permit me to say that my mother-in-law is here, 95 years of age, and it's a tribute to you as well as to me. And, of course, we're familiar with the old saying that back of every achievement is a proud wife and a surprised mother-in-law. And then I added, and she really is surprised. She thought I'd be the president.
You've written quite a few books, too, haven't you?
Well, just the number you have, Jack. Now, if you're going to mention my books, I want to mention yours. I hope that you're... Well, it's like my father said when he was asked about it, when the second book came out, somebody said, Mr. Hayes, have you read Brooks's last book? He said, I hope so. I hope that you haven't published your last book. The University of North Carolina book is The Southern Moderate Speaks, and the Christian Workshop book by the Broadman Press.
You got some stories about Adlai Stevenson, too.
Well, my favorite story has to do with a story that Adlai must have been paid some money for. I shouldn't make any inquiries because he didn't divide it with me. The Reader's Digest published, didn't they generally do, you know? But it went back to 1955 when I was a delegate to the United Nations. And at that time, the communists were trying to get Outer Mongolia into the General Assembly. I came up with this compromise. I said, let's take Outer Mongolia in. And in order to cancel out Outer Mongolia's vote, we'll take Texas in, on the theory that Texas is just as independent as Outer Mongolia, and generally speaking, would be as loyal to the United States as Outer Mongolia to the communists, you know. And but I said, if we do, let's change the name of Texas to Outer Arkansas. And the Texans liked it too. I didn't lose any friends there.
Did you have a boy from Arkansas? What's that about Indochina? What?
Oh, yes, one of our good hill country boys. He was over in the Pacific one day and spoke with the usual Arkansas accent, more pronounced than mine. He was asked by this friend who didn't identify, the native rather, he said, are you Indo-Chinese? He said, no, it's a outdoor Arkansas.
Well, Brooks, you leave in just, I think, an hour and a half. You leave Idlewild for Africa with you. Have you ever been there before?
Never have set foot on Africa.
Exciting, marvelous place.
I'm eager to go. The president wants me to visit Liberia, Nigeria, Dahomey, and Sierra Leone, and gather some facts that will help us in our work at the White House.
Well, Godspeed to your trip, and my regards to your lovely wife. And all of us are very happy to have met you and to know that such fine men are around the president. I didn't know we had so many Baptists around the president. I'm awful happy to know that we got a few boys in there, because that's awful good, I think.
Well, the Harvard boys outnumber the rest of us, too, and the Baptists are trying to hold their own.
Well, we have a good government, and we have a good president.
Well, I'm grateful. I'll enjoy bearing your greetings to him.
Well, first tell him who I am, and then tell him. Good night, sir.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Another dimension to the life and influence of Brooks Hayes, Christian statesman, is found in the following speech delivered by Mr. Hayes to the New Orleans Council of Churches.
Dr. Lee, members of the clergy, and my fellow churchmen, I know I have your sympathy as I undertake to acknowledge this very flattering and fulsome introduction, one of the best that I ever had. I don't think I'll attempt it. I think I'll just say thank you, Avery. I'm afraid I'll do as the preacher did up home when we surprised him with the gift of a new automobile. He said, I don't appreciate this, but I sure do deserve it. I'm somewhat humbled, Mr. Van Manen, by your reference to my knowledge of the Bible. The implication, I thought, was very clear. But it reminded me of something that took place in Washington some time ago, and I had breakfast with Dr. Ernest Griffith of American University. He said, well, former President Truman was out at my Sunday school class banquet last night, and he said it was a wonderful evening. I said, what did he talk about? He said, well, his subject was my two favorite chapters of the Bible. And, of course, I was eager to know what they were. He said, the fifth chapter of Matthew, and I said, the Sermon on the Mount. And he said, Exodus 20th chapter. And I said, 20th chapter of Exodus. He said, Brooks, I'm amazed that the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention doesn't know where the Ten Commandments are located. And I went back to my office, and I give you my word, I hadn't been there 5 minutes until the phone rang, and it was Congressman Burleson of Texas. He said, Brooks, where are the Ten Commandments? And I said, the 20th chapter of Exodus. I knew you'd know. I knew you'd know. Well, you've given us a fine welcome. My wife and I have enjoyed the things that have been done for us last evening and today. It reminds me of the time that Governor McKeldin was going up to Baltimore from Annapolis one time, And en route over this little 35-mile road, he was hailed by a hitchhiker, a little fellow, 10 or 12 years of age. And the governor, a very gracious Methodist, stopped the car, swung the door open, and said, "Get in, young man." And the little fellow rode into the city limits of Baltimore, not knowing he was riding with the governor of the state. And at the city limits, the committee met him. They had the band and the police escort, and they rode into the city with all the pomp and pageantry that goes with receiving the governor. The little fellow's eyes just stuck out. And finally, to relieve his curiosity, the governor said, "Do you know who all of this is for?" He said, "Well, it must be for one of us." I want to stay with this matter of Russellville for a moment, because in that little church, since I struggle between the pull of the ministry, I'm sharing in a very intimate way with you tonight some of the recollections that have come to me in this interesting interlude in our lives. I recall the fact that I felt some inclination to become a minister, and yet the lure of governmental service, of politics, was very great. And they used to say at Russellville, now that was really a contest. Would the church get him, or would the state? Would he be a minister or a politician? And that's all right, except I can't help complaining a little over one comment. He said, "Well, the church won that battle, didn't it?" Actually, I've sort of held on to both, and now I'm in a third world, the world of education. And I think these three areas of life are exciting, and that there is some logic in occupying, at this stage in my life, a role in the educational world, because I'm sharing with these students some of the impressions I have as a churchman interested in carrying the ideals of our faith into political and governmental life. And to me, this is a marvelous demonstration of the fact that you do believe in the spirit of unity, the utilization of the resources that the churches have been the stewards of through the centuries in the building of a better world, of a good world, because only the person who is sensitive to this ideal of building a good society with the propulsion of our faith, acknowledging our responsibility to God who made the earth and who created us, his family, the human family, to preside over it. These things come to me as I recall some of the early meditations I had as a student in that little Sunday school, living in a rectangle, and you could describe it by drawing a line from the little home that Father paid $1,000 for in 1903 to the little church, to the courthouse, to the public school, and back to the home again. Some would have regarded it as a rather dull, prosaic, uninteresting life, and yet it was not uninteresting to me, for the great world seemed compressed into this rectangle. But I recalled, as I listened to speeches in the courthouse and began to evolve some ideals, some aspirations to serve the public, to be a politician, if we must use the ordinary word for it, and we really lack a good word to describe this. I recall determining in those days that if my philosophy as a politician were to be meaningful, there would have to be moral and spiritual content in it. And so I turned back to the church as my inspiration.